Radio.
It's time to get stuffed. She's the queen of mean, she can't be tamed. Larger than life with a tiny frame. Sit back, relax, and loosen up. It's Lisa Lampanelli and you're gonna get stuffed.
Lisa Lampanelli.
Hello, everyone out there. It's Lisa Lampanelli in the great... Wait, let me start over because that's retarded. That, you know what? Why don't we just leave that in, Jim? That's Jim, perfect. Are you listening? My modulation is high. We are, and my dynamics are quite high, as I've been told too, which means you're fucking loud. Okay, so I had started this podcast thinking, oh, today I'm not going to curse. Well, I already did, so I don't fucking care because I have to know that. I have to have my fans know it's me. All right, so we're going to start over, but you're still going to air all that, Jim. People need to know Lisa Lampanelli's just like them, except rich.
A take two.
Shut up, Mike. Anyway, hey, everybody, it's Lisa Lampanelli, and you're listening to Get Stuffed with Lisa Lampanelli with my co-host, Mike Morse, and I did not even use adjectives that were negative towards you. I will do that enough during the show.
Flawless intro.
Beautiful. This is why I have changed my website, Mike. If people go to my website now, I put at the top, insult comic, podcaster, inspiration to millions, because I feel like through this podcast, I inspire people to be their best selves, even if it's kind of shitty.
Mm-hmm. You found your niche.
I have, and that is spelled N-I-C-H-E for those of you who are stupid, because I'm not. Mike, here's some words I'm sure you never thought you'd hear from me. This week, I was watching on Netflix a biography of Joan Didion.
Okay.
Did you ever think you would hear those words
no.
out of me? No, because I'm smart and people don't know it.
Maybe Joan Collins.
Yeah, shut up. Maybe, who's the other Collins? Jackie Collins,
yes.
Even better. Well, Joan Didion, unlike Jackie Collins, was a great writer who wrote a fantastic book years ago called Slouching Towards Bethlehem. Now, the reason I mention this is it's one of my favorite books because I'm very erudite and astute and all other words that begin with an E or maybe a U. And in that book, and they recalled it to me during the documentary, she wrote a beautiful essay about when you know it's time to leave Manhattan. Mm. And she said, during my 28th year. Okay, she wasn't British, nor did she talk like
that. I would prefer that you do it like
yes,
that.
Yes, I wish I had the exact quote, but she said something that during her 28th year, she slept more than she was awake. And quote, she really found out the definition of staying too long at the fair. Mm. And she knew enough to get out. Sure. She had a husband to support her, unlike Lisa Lampanelli, who has no one. But that's okay. It's all right. It's fine. I'm not bitter about that. I'm glad to be on my own. But one needs to sometimes say, I have stayed too long at this fair, and this fair is sometimes called a job, not to be confused with job fair, which is something you go to in college and never quite ever find a job at. And it's just a scam to get you to pay $10.
Right.
Have you ever gone to a job fair, Mike?
I've never had a job. So
that's
no
true.
Reason.
That's true. Now, Mike, a lot of people in mine and Joan Didion's words, I've stolen her words, have stayed too long at the fair. And then you're like, why do I hate my job? Why do I hate myself? Why do I, as Joan did, sleep more than she woke? Yes. Why do people stay in miserable situations? Is it self-hate? Is it fear? I think it's both. What do you think, Mike Morse?
Well, I have more questions than answers because I want to
know. Of course you do.
What do you think you've stayed too long at comedy?
I'm not talking about me. How dare you?
I thought you were talking about you.
I'm telling people they are staying too long at their fair.
Okay.
You know, here's how I feel about myself.
Okay.
I always know when I need to introduce something new into my life. Mm-hmm. So basically, yes. Did I get sick of doing comedy 7 years ago and say, if I have to stand up there in front of another group of fucking loudmouths, I'll kill myself. Why don't I write a play? And now that the play is done, I'm like, oh, comedy's starting in February. That'll be exciting.
Okay.
For a list of show dates, please go to insultcomic.com schedule page. So here's what I say. You have to know when to inject something into your life. If it's not a toxic situation, you can stay. So basically, comedy to me is a fun thing. It's not toxic. It pays well. I enjoy flying out there. I enjoy doing one show for huge amounts of money and coming home. This is a good life. You can't complain.
Right.
Some people stay too long. So they have to decide, is the situation worth it for the abuse they are suffering, or the indignities and the Harvey Weinsteinisms, and of course the Kevin Spaceyisms, and possibly the George Takeyisms that they have had to put up with at these aforementioned jobs.
Right.
Now, have you ever felt compelled to leave any situation, a job? I know you haven't had real jobs, but has it ever come across your transom, as it were, as they said in Spinal Tap, the best movie ever? Has it ever come across you, oh, I need to change it up, I need to do something different?
Well, yeah, I as you know, I am a fantastic stand-up comedian.
I don't think that's true. Okay. Well, let's just go with it.
A lot of people say I am fantastic.
No, you do get your laughs, daddy.
It's hilarious.
Yes.
But I'm kind of phasing out of that and mm-hmm. more into the writing. And mm-hmm. because, you know, you get to a certain age, you don't want to see old people at a comedy club.
That's a great point. Unless you're famous and old.
Right.
No.
Right.
So basically, since you're famous to parts of Staten Island and possibly Upper Monmouth County.
Couple pockets of Jersey.
Yeah. You don't want to be too long. But do you still derive enjoyment from it?
I derive more enjoyment now that I really don't give a shit about career.
There you go, people.
I'm not going to get on the Tonight Show or the...
He's never going anywhere. I take pity on him and put him on this every week.
Get in the audience of the Tonight Show.
That's true. You know, that's sad. Me neither.
but now I could just go and do it the way I want to do it and have fun doing it.
So basically, once you detach from the results... Mm-hmm. It's more fun.
Yes.
Like if comics, even in that you go up on a stage and expect to kill or expect to get huge laughs or expect to sell out a place, mm-hmm. you're going to be disappointed no matter what.
Right.
You cannot have these results so imprinted in your mind that you're miserable if it doesn't happen. So for you to go out there now and go, I'm just going to have fun with it. I'm going to not really care that it's for a living. Right. I'm going to use writing for a living instead. This takes the pressure off. Therefore, you're funnier.
Right.
Now, the problem is, what if you get so funny then in your own head, of course, because not in reality, that you're like, oh, my God, I want to now definitely do this for a living. Then the pressure comes back on and you kill yourself.
But I am aware enough, self-aware enough that you know, what's the next step? You have to get something on TV or whatever.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to look at me.
Ugh, no. You're not going anywhere.
No.
You're nondescript. Mike, you're even worse than the ugly guy because... You're just not memorable.
I could probably rob a bank.
Yeah.
And they go, well, it was a white guy.
Exactly. So that's what you've got going for you, that you're white, so you don't mind working.
And I kind of blend in.
That's true.
Right.
So basically how I feel is there's a lot of people who stay in situations too long, and then invariably they're friends with me, mm-hmm. and they have to complain about it. And they have to say, I should leave my husband. I should leave my job. I should leave this. And then I got to hear about it. Listen, if you're friends with me... out there listening, and by the way, if you're not listening to this and you're my friend, which I guess they wouldn't know I'm saying this to them, but I'm going to call them and play this on their machine, fuck you, because you should be listening to this, my podcast. You should be a supportive friend,
right?
But my friends need to know that I don't want to hear their complaining. I'll listen to it 2, 3, 4 times. I'm Jesus of Nazareth.
Okay. But also it's the length and when they're doing it. If you just say, how you doing? They go, oh, it sucks. My husband sucks. And you can go, oh, let's get some bagels.
Yes.
Yeah. Then, but if you go on and on, it's like, well, you know.
Well, yeah. And if it's year 72, if I'm in a nursing home with them and they're still going, oh, I should leave my husband Morris. Morris died, stupid. Listen, Estelle, he's dead. You're dead. Shut the fuck up. Now, as far as career goes, Mike, who knows what career my path will take? Who knows what twists and turns are out there for Lisa Lampanelli? Now that I'm, as you know, a fantastic comedian, I'm a terrific podcaster, a terrific author of a play, terrific actress. I think the whole point here is to do it until you're not miserable doing it. Right. Don't stay until you're miserable. Because here's what happened. You've missed all the red flags along the way. And then you exit in an angry huff, or you show your penis to someone to get you out of that career. Hmm. That's what I think subconsciously, by the way, going on with a lot of people. They're showing their penises so they can get the hell out and stay home.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe it's a test to see how successful they really are. It's like, I can get away with anything.
Well, Mike, I'll do you one better. I think it's killing a character. I think Pee Wee Herman years ago, by the way, who jerked off in a movie theater. Now that you hear about Weinstein and Louis C.K. and all these other guys, you go, jerk off in any movie theater, even if it's during Coco, that Thanksgiving animated fucking movie for Latinos.
Right.
When did that happen, by the way? Why does everybody fucking have to have an animated movie? Anyway, be that as it may, Pee-wee Herman killed the character of Pee-wee Herman because I think he wanted to escape that character.
All right.
Now, you don't have to jerk off in a movie theater or grab a woman's pussy. If you're me, I believe you should end things the way you started them, with dignity.
But nobody does that, though.
I do.
Well, you do.
Shut up. Mike, if I end a relationship and a friendship, I do it with dignity. I write them an email. And at the end, I always sign it, despite all the crappy things I say in the email. I say, but I wish you nothing but the best. Now, that's very Churchillian of me, and it's also very Joan Didion of me, I believe.
Didion-ish.
Yes. No, you don't think, because even when I had my divorce from Jimmy Big Balls, I was like, okay, it began with screaming. You lazy fuck, go get my medication. That's what it started with. But afterwards, it was like, let's calm it down. Things aren't going well. I don't know why I got a Jewish accent when I did that breakup.
Joan Didion would not do that.
She would not, even though she was a Jew, I believe. Maybe I'm not.
I don't know.
We'll cut up at some point,
okay,
along with your other stuff you never do. And I think we ended it on a nice note,
right,
if you will.
Well, yeah, you are the an exception to that.
But
rule.
That's because I'm 56 years old, and I've had enough of my life where I just storm out, slam the door and go, you suck, lick my fucking left nut. I will pull a Louis C.K. on you, motherfucker.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't say it back then because I didn't know what that was. But it kind of, there were rumors. Okay. So I think people need to recognize the signs and the flags that they're in a toxic environment. Let's take workplace, for example, and get out before you storm out and shoot a bunch of people or shoot your load all over your manager's face.
Those are two very different ways of handling it.
Listen, it's all bullets it's all to the face, in my opinion. All right. So are there any signs, Mike, that you have come across that people need to get the F out while the getting is good?
Yes. I actually found this on bustle.com. It's signs that your work environment is toxic.
See, toxic, man. Dude, this is what happens to people. I've taken many seminars and workshops. The minute you're in a toxic environment, you're going to get sick yourself. You find yourself feeling fatigued, calling in sick. You hold on to fat more because your cortisol levels are through the roof. Now, these menopausal cunts will say, oh, it's menopause. It's this. Listen, check your environment too. Your home life, your family life, your work life. Because honestly, you're at work, what, 2 hours a day? What do normal people work?
A little more than two, usually.
Well, what do poor people work? Eight hours a day?
At least eight, yes.
Okay, you're at work 8 hours a day. That's a third of your freaking day. Are you kidding me? Get out if you have a toxic environment.
That's good. Now, it's not always that easy because you might not have anything.
Let me tell you something. Yeah. Mike, you're always about the excuses.
I'm trying
It's
to...
not that easy.
Here's a thing.
I know it's not that easy, but we're going to pretend it is just for the sake of this conversation.
But
people need to stop with this. Here's the worst excuse for not leaving a job, I want to say. But I've been there so long. Really? Really? Yeah. And your uncle's been diddling you so long, that's why you should stick around for that?
That's often what happens.
Yeah. Well, stop it. I say leave. And get those resumes out. Do it. It's not easy to find a new job. You might have to take a step down. Is it worth to you less money or the strain and an early death?
Right. Why? Well, I do have some.
No, you don't.
I do.
Okay.
This
is causing you stress, so we'll go over it.
This is a toxic work environment.
It certainly is. See, this is all a ploy to get you to quit. Enjoy.
All right. Now, one is your boss has poor leadership skills. That you don't respect him and that he, always tries to either bully you or Yeah.
That's pulling a Harvey Weinstein, but in a work environment of like an office.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a buffoon for a boss that you don't respect and he bullies you, et cetera, you can't work for someone you don't respect. You know, Mike, how you respect me and you know I'm way above you.
We'll go with that.
Yeah. You find this non-toxic. That's why it's fantastic for you. Yeah. That one I find not that bad because I'm usually the bullier. So,
there you go.
I see that.
But there had to be jobs you've had before becoming vastly successful. That yes. And even and here's the thing with what we do, and you and I on a bigger
level.
Thank you. Is there's no one job work place. It's
right.
It's you know you're it's a different club. It's a different theater. It's a different TV show. It's a different play. You know.
So then you say I'm not going back to that place.
Right.
So it's easier. But for people with real jobs, and I know we're talking to the most for the most part, we're talking to people who actually have to go to work every day. It's like this. I think I've told you about years ago. I had to work for this woman who she was 60 and had no talent. But she was super rich, so I had to keep house for her. And I was a beginning comic, and I was like, oh, I'm going to, you know, like she, and, you know, really live for free there. But she was really hardcore. So she was a bullier. She was very tough to German. Well, enough said. So was it worth staying for the free human board? Maybe. But then you get to the point where you go, okay. This is getting too much for me. So it wasn't always easy. A lot of times when people give advice like myself or other self-help gurus, just go with that. They go, oh, it's easy for you to say because you have savings. Is it? No, because sometimes you just got to run home to mom. Sometimes you got to get the job at the McDonald's. Do you think I ever worked at McDonald's? I wasn't even good enough to work at a McDonald's. I worked at Cousin Ed's Hot Dog House when I was 16, and it was spelled H-A-U-S, okay? So this was a place in Trumbull Mall in Connecticut, and I worked there. The thing is, we all got to sometimes take a downgrade. But if you got a boss who's bullying, you got to file a complaint, first of all, so you maybe have a chance of getting out of there with a little dough, and then get the F out. What else sucks about
jobs?
How about
your colleagues are unprofessional? They spread rumors. They don't take their job seriously. They throw you under the bus.
Wow. That sounds like my year on The Celebrity Apprentice. So I got to say, I'm guilty of doing those two things to people so far. I've created toxic work environments. And Jackie and Mike and Frank, I apologize. Okay, next.
I feel better now. That your work-life balance is out of whack.
That's a big one. Because balance is the most important thing for your physical health. And if you don't have your physical health, what are you doing? You're going to die and you're going to be, this is the guy too, who puts off retiring till he's 70. Then he's like, oh, I'm finally free, buys the RV, dies in the RV the first day.
Right.
You know, sure, it's probably because his wife killed him because he's annoying to have around the house. But that's the thing. You got to have balance. You got to have enough good food, enough movement, enough stress reduction, and enough, what's the other one? Sleep.
Sleep.
Nobody thinks sleep is important. It's not a luxury. It's something you need to get. So if that's all out of whack and you're working 80 hours a week, even though you're going to make partner, is it going to say on your grave, partner?
Probably.
Yeah, that's a pretty good credit. Yeah, I put it on mine. But you know what? If it's out of balance, it's no good.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Most people I've met who are very successful, either in show business or in anything, have a shitty home life. They're like, or no home life.
Well, guess what, Mike?
Yeah.
You know stupid people.
Well,
Shut up!
I was putting you in that.
No, I know. No, because I'm getting more balanced.
Well, now, but on
shut
your
up!
Way, on your way. But I'm defending your work ethic.
You. I'm bullying you into being submissive.
Sorry.
No, seriously, though, I realize the error of putting 99% of my effort into career. I really don't think it's the right thing. And you're really running for something. Excuse me. You really run. You can keep that in, Jim. I'm very, very
open.
You gotta realize you're running from something. If you're putting too much into your career, you're either running from feeling bad about yourself or you're running into, oh, I'm gonna earn so much money, people will respect me. I'm gonna earn so much fame, people are gonna love me. No one's gonna love you.
Right.
Shut up about it.
But you got the money.
That's true. Go ahead.
Yeah. But really, do you know any really successful comedian who didn't over?
But if you're successful as a comedian, then you're not successful as a person in that instance.
Right.
So I would rather be, I've always said this, I would rather have less fame and more sanity. And have I been driving towards that lately? Yes, but only in the last 5-6 years. Mm. But I always like, remember when Roseanne was so huge? I was always like, that level of success sounds so hard.
Right.
Do I want it? In theory, yes. Do I want the Amy Schumer level of success years ago? In theory, yes. In reality, I think I would kill myself because it's too much. Mm-hmm. It's too much. You have to realize what you really need on the inside all those quick fixes of career and money and fame, it doesn't work. It never works. Ask Joan Rivers. She never felt good about herself. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be hard to ask her because she's dead. The poor woman was finally enjoying her life and she's dead.
And she dropped it.
Stop dying, everyone.
Yeah. Let's see. You're not excited about going to work anymore.
Yeah, that's the worst. But Mike, here's a question. Believe me when I tell you, the word excitement doesn't even come into my mind when I think about you and Jim coming over to record this fucking podcast. I mean, I think the word is dread. I mean, I honestly was driving into the city yesterday and I go, there is nothing I dread more than those two idiots coming over my house. And I'm thinking, but today is fun doing it.
Yes, this is it's a podcast, not a home invasion.
Well, I know, but it seems like a forced cornholing sometimes.
Do you have a safe room somewhere? Yeah.
But isn't it weird? I dread work. And you know, this is fantastic. One of my girls in the play said to me once, because I told her, oh my God, I can't wait till this play's over. It's so much work. And she goes, you're exactly like, and she named a really famous actor she knows. He loves getting the role and then hates going to work. And I go, that's what I am. I hate coming here and recording this, even though it's my house, and coming here means coming into the living room from the very close by bedroom. However, doing it is good. Mm-hmm. So that's a real thing people need to say. Are you dreading the actual experience, or have you built up in your mind that this environment is so bad that you can't come in? Mm-hmm. So if you're dreading it, check yourself, bitch. Just like I have to check myself every time you two idiots walk in, I have a good time. Enough said.
Go figure.
Me.
That's why I get the hell out of here as soon as this
exactly.
is done.
I said, get out. Yeah. Your
endorphins are still bubbling. Yeah. All right. Your boss is preventing you from growing, that you don't get promotions. He doesn't help you. He or she does not help you get more opportunities.
Yeah, but maybe you're the jerk. Maybe you're the one who's a sucky at your job. And then, like, say you're a hitman. That's a good job.
That's a good job.
Suppose you only have two kills. What, are we supposed to give you a big whale now?
Yeah. I would think, as a hitman, you have to be, like, pretty much 100%.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, if you do what the first miss, you're like, I'm not going to fucking hire this guy.
No. You know what? This is a message to all you hitmen out there. By the way, how is it that job even came into my mind? See, this is what we have to figure out about me. But enough about me. We'll do me next week.
Yeah.
But yes, if you're not moving up at the rate you think you should, and by the way, check yourself too to think, are you being realistic? Mm-hmm. Like maybe you're late all the time because you're miserable coming in because you dread it, because you dread Mike and Jim coming over your house. And that's why your podcast downloads aren't going up.
Right.
Go ahead.
A lot of jobs, probably there is no room for growth.
Yeah.
And you stay there anyway.
Fry elevator is going to be as far as you get. Mm-hmm. Come on. If you can't make it to the shake mix maker, you're pretty much a fucking loser. All right. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You're constantly getting sick.
Did I just tell you that stress makes you sick?
Yes.
If I didn't, I was wrong, but I did. Stress makes you sick. And that's what you need.
Gives you gas.
Well, see, I'm drinking my green juice. That's how you stay healthy. You drink your green juice. Mm-hmm. And if you drink your green juice in a toxic environment, one cancels the other out. So you have to do one, quit one or the other. Either commit fully to be a fat, unhappy slob, or drink your green juice and just leave and become a yoga teacher who'll never work again.
Well, some of these are kind of repetitive. Well, repetitive. You're not feeling respected in your work.
Yeah, yeah. You think I feel any respect from you?
No.
Nobody. Come in my house, make me freaking get out of bed. Fucking assholes.
Well, it is, you know, it's the middle of the day.
So. Shut up! How dare you, sir?
And we'll just end, there's others, but you begin to question your own worth.
See, that's the worst. Mm-hmm. That is why people stay around for the cornholing by the uncle. Unfortunately, I had to put that unfortunately in there. This is why people stay with the husband or wife who's abusive too long. You question that you have worth. You stay in a job that grinds you down. Wouldn't you rather leave while you still have your self-esteem intact? Mm-hmm. So out there, listen to me. Listen, I swear to God, I know you're not listening, people. Okay, good. Now that you've pulled over and you're paying attention, type this. No, type it. Really, really. Put out your computer. Okay, hold on. Okay, now ready? All caps. Leave your job before... What was it?
before you
Leave your job before your self-esteem is intact. Because honestly, suppose the unforgivable happens, the unforeseen happens, Mike. Suppose I go back to comedy in February and the people don't respect me anymore. They start booing en masse.
That can't happen.
I know, it's unthinkable. However, let's use our powers of imagination because we are creative people. People start booing and they say, we don't like this no more. Like I let them yell out a full sentence. We like Trump. We don't like your anti-Trump jokes, blah, 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 blah. You know what, Mike? I have enough self-esteem now that I would get the F out before they chipped away at it. I've worked too long and so people, you know, I joke around a lot, but I mean this. You've worked too long at trying to get a little self-esteem up by losing your weight, by drinking your green juice, by belching on the air. That's not you, it's me. By doing everything you can to raise yourself up, you can't stay in a work environment that makes you question yourself. Now, speaking of which, Mike, there's two people who have questioned themselves, to my knowledge, that I know as friends, and questioned their value as comics slash entertainers because they were in toxic environments, and they are our guests today. So we are going to come back with my buddy Jamie Kilstein, a former comic who is considering coming back into the business, who had some controversial things happen in his career. And also we will of course check in with Frank DeCaro, who he will talk about his self-esteem being chipped away at a certain unnamed radio station. We'll be back with Get Stuffed with Lisa Lampanelli! I quit!
Get Stuffed with Lisa Lampanelli. We'll be right back.
Hey everybody, Lisa Lampanelli here. And you know how you always want that pair of jeans that fits you perfect, that doesn't give you a muffin top, that doesn't give you a camel toe, and especially not the dreaded camel top, which is a combination of each? Yeah, we all want that pair of jeans, but we can never find it. I'm speaking from my personal experience that I used to hate jeans until I found Distilled. It's spelled D-S-T-L-D, and these are jeans that won't break the bank, but will last and fit fantastic. They don't have gimmicky studs and crazy stitching or diamond embellishments. Please, that is so 1980 and not in that cool 1980s way. Distilled jeans are luxury grade denim at an affordable price. These jeans would normally cost hundreds of dollars. Distilled has them starting at a mere $75. And these are jeans you could wear every day and not feel the chafing, the itching, the burning that normal jeans give me. Okay, maybe not you, but me. Distilled uses the same fabrics, factories, and wash houses as the best known brands and designers, but they skip the markups and the middlemen. So what do you get? Pure, unadulterated denim without the retail runaround. Just go to distilled.com, that's spelled D-S-T-L-D.com, and see the place that minimalist design meets maximum comfort. Distilled guarantees the fit too. They'll ship them to you for free and give you free returns until you find the perfect pair. Not only that, Distilled has been featured in Forbes, Time, TechCrunch, and has been seen on celebrities in GQ and Vogue. Come on. Distilled is the only place in the U.S. where you can get this quality of denim for this price point. Also, they have an amazing selection of outerwear, leather jackets, t-shirts, and more using the same principles of high-grade materials at low-end costs. Even celebrities are wearing Distilled's. I've got a pair of them, and trust me, I'm not pulling them out of my ass crack. Because guess what? They're not there. Distilled is your answer to elevated style without elevated prices. And believe me, if I'm telling you it, it's true. Just go to distilled.com right now and use the promo code FERAL, that's F-E-R-A-L, at checkout to get 20% off your first pair. That's distilled.com, D-S-T-L-D.com, and promo code FERAL. Five letters, D-S-T-L-D.com. Five letters, perfect jeans.
Get Stuffed with Lisa Lampanelli. Welcome back
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. It's Get Stuffed with Lisa Lampanelli. And I have in the studio / living room of my palatial estate in New York City, my good friend, comic / former comic / what the fuck is he, Jamie Kilstein. Now, Jamie, you became aware to me when? When did we first meet?
I don't know.
I think we were on a show together somehow, and like I just thought you were a good guy.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, it wasn't a stand-up show. You were definitely one of those people that like didn't see my act, and you were just like, "You're nice," and I was like, "I'll take it."
Yeah,
and
that's
then
true.
We became friends off of that, I think.
And do you know, I do not watch stand-up comics at all.
I don't think a lot of comics do.
No, because we consider it work.
Right.
Like, I don't want to go to work. Like, if somebody says to me, oh, did you see Schumer's latest special? Even though I'm a fan, I'm like, no, because it's me going to work.
Right.
So
yeah,
I'd rather
it would be
just
like
not
someone being like, do you want to go teach on a Sunday? It's like, fuck those kids on a Sunday.
That's
like,
true.
No,
fuck those kids every day.
Every day.
Fuck not those literally kids. Fuck those kids, because no. Then you have to leave that toxic environment.
Right.
We just talked about that before. But so I liked you as a person. I thought you were a real gentleman and nice guy.
I'm a terrible comic.
No. Actually, you're not. I don't think so, because I saw one bit you did on Green Room with Paul Provenza,
right.
And it
that's
was really
right.
good.
Dude, Paul.
Now, dear Paul, he's such helpful. Now, here's the thing, Jamie. What are you currently? You were a comic for how many years?
I dropped out of high school at 17. I'm 35 now. So I started like taking the train in from Jersey to New York at 17 and just doing like really bad open mics and stuff like that. So, I mean, technically, I've almost been doing it for, I mean, Jesus, a while, right? Like 17 to 35. But I feel like there were several breakups in between, like
right.
year-long breakups. So I don't
now,
know.
Now, what happens, to illustrate what happens, why do people / you leave something for, say, a year at a clip? Like, what? Say, take one of those breaks in your head, because we're talking to people about leaving their current environment when it becomes too toxic, when they're just not getting out of it what they want to. What leads to a break like
that? Yeah, so I'm in a weird spot where I think I'm going to end up hopefully giving advice everyone can relate to, because there's good and bad, and there's stuff that's my fault and there's stuff that's not. Where I feel like there are some environments, relationships, jobs, which are just straight up toxic, and you develop some sort of like Stockholm syndrome to it and you stay too long, right?
Yep.
But I also think there have been a lot of times where when I leave something, I have to burn it to the fucking ground. Burn it to the ground, because I think it's a form of protection, of like protecting myself. So if I quit comedy, it was never, you know what, I really like, I've always loved stand up. It's always spoke to me, but now's not the time. It's just like every comic is a monster.
And you forget the Lisa Lampanelli
is
exists.
Garbage. Yeah, you exist.
Yeah.
But it's true. Like, I mean, I didn't reach out to you. I didn't reach out to Provenza. I didn't reach out to a lot of comics because I didn't want to be reminded there was good, right? It's like when you don't want to check like the Facebook of your ex, right? I mean, you also don't, because it's fucking weird, don't do that. But it's creepy, but like but that's what happens, where I just want to move on, and I have a very addictive personality when it comes to everything, food, I mean everything, and I just sort of throw myself into something really hard. But then if I get away, I have to. Like, I just got back with my girlfriend who you met, who's like wonderful.
I had no idea you broke up.
We had a short breakup, and in that breakup, like, I have to like reintroduce her to all of my friends, because during that breakup, I'm just like, she is a monster. Don't let me call her.
Oh my God, you loved her.
Oh my God, so much. I'm so in love with her. And I have to like go back to my family and be like, I said some things, and you have to like totally walk it back.
Right.
And that's just what I do as a defense mechanism.
But is there something you can do to not do that?
Well, that's what I'm trying to do now. Like, going back into stand-up is, you know, my first show back was really good. I did that All Things Comedy Festival, and it was great. It was just like really hardcore comedy fans. But this was the first week in New York that I just did regular spots. And I did two at Gotham, and that first one was kind of garbage. It wasn't great, and I definitely like put a lot on it. Like, in my head, I put too much like pressure on it. And I walked out, and I was like, I remembered the things I would have used to said to myself, where I would have been like, you know, fuck that crowd. I should have gone like even like harder. Like, they don't know what comedy is. Like, something about Bill Hicks. And you know, that would have been a time that I would have I mean, I think I named one of my shows Jamie Kilstein Hates Comedy. Like, that was, right, like, the constant struggle I had. And then instead, I go, I'm going to do a spot tomorrow. And mm-hmm. I'm going to take notes on what I could have done better. Now, what the crowd could have done better, I'm going to take notes on what I could have done better.
Yeah, because you know it's all us. Totally. I mean, we're putting on the crowd things we want them to do.
I never knew that. I never knew that. Because, you know, it's the comics I idolized were the ones who, you know, would go off on the audience. That's who a lot of comics idolize, because that's a great thing to idolize, because it's easy to go off on a crowd.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. if you call, like, a woman a cunt, you can be like, I'm Bill Hicks. And it's like, well, Hicks also wrote, like, a lot of really good jokes and, like, probably wasn't thrilled with himself that night. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, we look at it like, what a badass. But it's like, that probably wasn't a good night for him. Right. And maybe it was. I don't know. But so I think now I'm actually just really excited to, like, I don't think I ever put the work in, because I think I always kind of felt like I was going to fail, felt like a failure, and distanced myself. So anyway, so not to make it about me, but to your question, which is sometimes we also run away from really hard things that are scary and we feel like we're failing. Because the first time I quit comedy, it was, you know, I had I feel like I just said this on another podcast, but I had a year that I called, like, the year I was, like, almost famous. Mm-hmm. And my dad's moving. That's one of the reasons I came back. Mm-hmm. I'm helping him move in Jersey. And he found this old Interview magazine where it was, like, the four comics to watch. And it was Aubrey Plaza, Jay Farrow, Reggie Watts, and me. And I had this moment where I'm like, oh, I'm the guy. Mm-hmm. Like, there's always one guy on the list that you're like, what happened to that guy? Like, meth, suicide, like, something tragic happened to him. And I'm like, that, or you're just like, who is that guy?
Right.
And I'm like, that was me.
Right.
And so, you know, I did that big, you know, Just for Laughs festival, like, three times. And I was the guy that people were like, man, we love you. We can't do anything with you.
Yeah.
But we love it. Keep doing it somewhere else. And the bottom line was, like, I just felt like a failure. Like, I was
So you let, we talked last segment about staying in the environment that chips away at your self-esteem, that mm-hmm. makes you question yourself. Now, so you started questioning that you're even good enough and go, let me get out. But here's the thing. Here's the catch 22. If we had been brought up to have good self-esteem,
right,
where we didn't allow that to happen,
right,
we wouldn't be comics.
So
it's such a weird, weird cycle.
I love that.
But with people in normal jobs, they can maybe recognize it and go, oh, I'm an accountant and I'm being treated badly. I should probably move on.
I can go to another firm or whatever. Right. If firm, is that what they call it?
Yeah. That's really
I think about that with, like, my childhood, where I'm like, so many fucked up things happened to me as a kid. But yeah, would I be creative if it didn't? And then, like,
but what part of you, aren't you, wouldn't you rather not be creative to have a good childhood and a normal life?
Because
I would.
Well, the childhood also made me stronger, right? Like, the reason I became funny was because me and my brothers, when, like, shit would happen with my family, we would all gather around upstairs hoping things would get better. And we were really tense and quiet and scared until someone made a joke, and then someone made a joke and it would just break that tension and we would laugh. And so it also, I think, makes you, you know, a certain amount of adversity makes you stronger. I mean,
sure,
there are a bunch of trust fund assholes out. I mean, look at, like, the Trumps, right?
Yeah.
It's like, those dudes didn't have a lot of adversity and they're monsters,
right,
like all
right,
of them.
Right.
But
here's the question. Will you know now, because I know we've talked about this, and I've said, I still think that people don't need to attach so much to a job.
Yeah.
They need to attach to the feeling of the job. Basically, if I retired from comedy tomorrow, if I could figure out the feeling I get from comedy and to get it somewhere else, whether it's helping other people, whether it's just connecting people to each other, then I can get that kick the comedy gave me. When will you know if comedy, what do you need to have happen for you to know, hey, this is great, it's working, and I really love it?
Yeah.
Is it just that self-talk that you were doing?
Yeah, kind of. Well, this week was really nice because I got to see it, right? Like, I had that bad show, and then I'm like, it's not about that. It's about the work. And then the next day, I had a great show at the same club, and I just, like, literally swapped the order of some material, like, slowed down, didn't come out so aggressive. Like, and I'm like, man, that's work I never did, because, you know, that year, even though nothing huge happened, it was enough because I was a failure for so long and I was homeless for so long and, you know, all this stuff that it was enough for me to kind of like, I don't think it was cocky because I'm too self-hating to be cocky, but I became impatient. Mm-hmm. I became like, why isn't my agent doing this? Or why isn't this manager doing this? I need to get a different agent. I need to get another manager. Oh, well, they're doing the same thing. I guess the whole industry's fucked and all this stuff. And I was like, well, I really wasn't doing, or blame the audience, right? Like I wasn't really doing the work. And I think that the two circles that I was in, one I'm no longer in, but the two circles I was in were comics and like progressive journalists. And that is a self-hating lot. And it's also a group that kind of, both of them, like kind of like turns their nose down. Is that an expression? That
turns
is, right?
Their nose up.
Turns their nose up at like sort of like self-help. Mm-hmm. And I think because I started doing mixed martial arts really seriously and started hanging around athletes who are sort of looked at as dumb. Mm-hmm. A lot of these athletes, they, you know, it was the first time I heard about like positive thinking without somebody calling it like gay. It was the first time you know, I met athletes who were like, yeah, I just read biographies of like great people, which my like progressive people would have been like, well, that's, oh, you just want to be like these like CEOs or like you're part of capitalism. It's like, no, they just want to be like inspired or whatever. And so this is the first time that I've really started trying to take care of myself. There was part of me when I went back to stand up, and this was only like a month ago, that I was like, well, I guess I become like depressed and an alcoholic again, like not even trying to be fun. I legitimately thought that because I'm like, I've been really positive and I wake up at 5 and I meditate and I go do jujitsu and all this stuff. And I was like, well, I guess I can't do it. And I started eating really shitty again. Mm. Like the first 2 weeks of comedy, I started drinking a little more than I probably should have. And because you're like, that's what it is to be a comic. You have to be miserable. You have to kind of be gluttonous and like, and then I snapped out of it because I was like, I just felt like I felt like garbage, but it was this really interesting moment. Mm. And so, you know, to answer your question, I think that as long as the goal is just be a better person and comedy happens to be the thing I'm doing,
yes,
there's not as much pressure on it. Whereas before, right, it was like comedy defines me. I am a comic, you know. I mean, I even told I lost agents because I was like, I just want to do stand up. They were like, could you audition for this TV thing? I refused. Like, that's how much of a purist I thought I was. Mm-hmm. But in reality, I was also probably just scared.
Scared.
And I didn't want to learn new things.
A lot of fear holds us back from those things.
Totally.
You know, and again, if you just, we were talking before about how once you let go of the results, it doesn't matter. And your life's going to be so much easier because Mike was saying how now that he doesn't look at doing stand-up as, oh, I have to earn a certain amount of money, you can just kind of go out there and have fun. And then the money does follow if it's supposed to. So I think if we continue to work on ourselves, the audience benefits, the world benefits, we benefit, and no one's hurt. Yeah. But it's those falling back into those traps that would definitely hurt us because the reality is, it's half our agent's fault and half our fault if we think there's a fault at all.
Totally.
You know, it's, you know, I wouldn't change for anyone, so I couldn't blame anyone but me.
Yeah.
I was more the opposite of you. You weren't blaming them. I was more like, I'm so sorry. I'm a disappointment to you, mommy and daddy.
Oh, no. I said that too.
Yeah.
I've cried in front of managers and
agents.
Well,
that's just gay.
Yeah.
What a fag this guy is.
No, I didn't finish. I was sucking his dick and.
Okay. Yeah. That's
it's called progressive, not gay. But yeah, I mean, I've totally had those breakdowns where like we're talking about comedy or whatever, and I'll say this just happened to me recently. I literally said, I go, look, man, like really like just like two comedy bros talking. I was like, look, man, I'm just like tired of being a fuck up. And suddenly from out of nowhere, I start sobbing.
Sure.
And my manager looked at me like, oh, this isn't about me. This is about your dad or something. I was like, yep.
Well, you know what they say? If it's hysterical, it's historical.
Yeah.
Because
there's
no way we're ever going to start bawling about a fucking comedy show.
No.
You know, we'll have our feelings hurt maybe a little.
No.
But even with my play, I remember one night I went up there and I was overly tired.
Yeah.
It's a really hard schedule. And I remember coming out and it was as little as putting in the F word where it didn't belong. I just really flippantly just fuck in this. And the audience just completely changed.
Just
and it was my
it, right?
attitude. It was me coming out and I had to spend the next 15 minutes earning it back just by being straight and narrow, not by pandering, but by being on the straight and narrow. I go, that was all me.
It's
never them.
Isn't that crazy when one word can do that?
Isn't it wild? But that's good because then we realize it's all about us and it's all about learning what we need to learn to get to the next place.
That's how I felt on that Tuesday night Gotham show where it was like, you know, I was like one of the pros on like a bringer show. So most of the people hadn't seen a comedy show. Mm-hmm. Everyone was just like far too nice where I'm like, you're not comedy fans.
Yeah, yeah.
You're like the they're rich friends of someone who signed up for a class or something.
Yes, totally.
And I came out so fucking aggressive.
I know.
But I even linked that to a lot of my other failures back then. I was just like, I'm not really an aggressive dude.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like a really mellow, like overly sweet, kind of anxious, paranoid guy. Mm-hmm. And I was like, why don't I just do that? Why don't I just do that the next night?
I was just going to ask you that. Why do you feel like you, because I know why I do it, I think. Why do you not go out and just talk honestly like this with punchlines?
Yeah, well, I did that on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. Usually I like take off my glasses because I think I look bad in my glasses. And I was like, I just don't give a shit. I'm just going to like be really honest. And I talked about my... my divorce for the first time, like nothing political. I closed with like a I think like a trans rights bit or something. Mm-hmm. But I was like, I'm just gonna. I've never talked about personal stuff really. And I was like, I'm just gonna. Yeah, I'm just gonna talk. I'm just gonna say hi. I'm gonna look at them more instead of going into these like rants where, you know, I mean, God, this poor bringer show, the poor comics in the back who like brought their families to see them. And the first comic is like, ah, these fucking cocksuckers. Yeah. And I'm just like going nuts. And I was like, I think for a long time, I just wanted to be that guy, you know, that Carlin or that Hicks or whatever. And I definitely feel those way with a bunch of, here's something interesting. My first, the story that really like hit, that people loved was a story about my dad and about the sort of basic premise was, you know, when you get older, like realizing that the reason you hated your parents is because they were decent people.
And
for the longest time, I've been this really rebellious comic. So it was a very bizarre story to tell. And it was about me realizing it and trying to make it up to him. And like when I went to like buy him this card, I got arrested because of him. It was this insane story. And I wasn't going to tell it on stage. It was just this weird story I had. And I was with Janine Garofalo, who is known as being like one of the most political comedians. We were in Union Square and I started telling her this story and she's like, are you going to tell that on stage? And I literally said, it sounds so childish now, but I go, no, it's not political. I can't.
Wow.
And she was like, of course you can. She was like, you have to.
Right.
And it ended up being like, I think one of the best things I've ever done on stage. And definitely my favorite. And what's weird is I felt more connected. You know, when you're talking about politics, you think you're connecting with the audience, but not if you're just kind of yelling at them.
Yeah.
Whereas talking about like this human, like me being a fuck up, actually probably connected with more people than the stuff I thought I was helping them with, which in reality, a lot of that political stuff came from like fear and self-righteousness. And, you know, it's why I became like very like overly like PC and stuff.
Well, don't
like
you
that.
Also think it's a way of, you know, not showing vulnerability and
totally.
Just being like, I'm going to put this facade on that I'm some political guy instead of, because I could see you doing things like The Moth and Risk and things like that. These storytelling things where you tell those stories and they're so heartfelt and entertaining, but also they have humor in them too. And it's almost like you'll never be able to tell a story without it being funny in a good way.
Totally.
And that's what Alan Zweibel told me. He just said, don't worry about the funny, tell the truth and then see what comes out.
Yeah.
So it's a huge risk for comics to do that and not be like punchline, punchline, punchline. Oh, let me cover it with some kind of a umbrella of political or whatever.
And when you're political, you don't really feel like you're like selling yourself out because you feel like you're doing this like righteous work, right? Like
I
was sort of the biggest asshole, you know, this year I took stand up off and started teaching martial arts and moved in with my girlfriend and got off social media and all this stuff. And all of my friends and family like have, I was like a better person. Like when I was like tweeting really political progressive things, I was kind of a shittier person because I thought everything I did was like for the cause. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, it's okay. Like I wasn't paying attention to my own relationships because I'm like, but I tweeted Black Lives Matter. So like I can like not call my mom back. Right. Like she's white. She's part of the problem. And like,
you know, what's funny? Do you talk about that stuff?
No, why?
That's really funny.
That's interesting.
Because write it down on your hand
you
with
my
address.
Going for my,
No, right. Because that's what I feel like. It's like that's such a, I'd read an essay about that.
Yeah.
You know, I'd listen to a story about right. that. And I just find it so funny when we, when comics can really strip away the bullshit.
Well, and that's what I want to do now that I'm coming back. Like, I mean, I'll always have political thoughts, but I'm like, you know, everything's so fucking weird right now in comedy and politics that it's like, you don't need another dude talking about it. But I've never talked about my depression. I was suicidal last year. I have all these thoughts about, yeah, that political versus good person thing. So I'm like, I think I want to talk about all of that. And I think it'll be more fucking interesting than just someone else yelling at you.
Oh my God. If I'd known you were a yelling political comic, I would have probably never watched you because yeah. I don't give a fuck about anything
no.
except people's, like, I care about what makes people tick. Like, I remember seeing a one person show that I won't say who it was. I didn't know anything more about him when I left them when I came in. And right. I was like, epic fail for me.
Right.
Some political guys liked him. I was like, that's fine. But I want to know about the person. So this thing of, you clearly haven't, quote, we were talking about that, quote, staying too long at the fair. You haven't done that. It's like coming back with something where you're aware you stayed too long in that vein.
Yeah.
And now it's time for a shift.
Totally. And I think I know that it's the right thing to do because I mean, I'm gonna have to start from scratch. Like, you know, I have some like big friends and stuff, but they don't know where to get like stage time on a Tuesday in LA. So it's like, I might go start doing like open mics when I go home. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
And so it's not like I'm like in it for the money. But it's one of those things I just feel like I kind of got to do. And I think so for like listeners who maybe aren't into comedy, like I feel like deep down you always know, and you know when you're lying to yourself. Mm-hmm. I know when I'm lying to myself. I know when sure. I'm saying an excuse to you mm-hmm. or my girlfriend or whoever. And I know when it's an excuse, you know, my girlfriend mm-hmm. probably does too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you also know, cause then if someone calls you out and they go, are you sure you're not scared? And you freak the fuck out on them.
Oh yeah. Then you know,
Yeah. Right. Cause you're just,
fuck you, man.
Yeah. You're just offensive. And, mm-hmm. and yeah, if you sound like you're yelling at your dad when he like won't let you go to a party, like
yeah.
it's that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You don't know me. It's like, no, they do. That's why they're calling you out on your bullshit.
Well, you know what I'd like to see you do? Because this is all about me telling people advice that don't
no, I
want
love
it.
This.
And telling, forcing my will upon others. I could honestly, I just think it's very fun. It's great because you're visually so counterintuitive to the guy who does a TED Talk.
Yeah.
Or does The
yeah.
Moth or does Grisk. Yeah. Because, you know, it's not that guy.
Right.
You know, the guy with the tattoos and the you know, a youthful edge. I say this. This is all very interesting stuff. And if I were you, I'd start talking about this. You don't have to take my advice, but let me tell you something. If you don't, you're fucking crazy.
Ha.
That's just how I roll. I could see a TED Talk about the guy who would not be vulnerable and suddenly has a little taste of what it's like to be vulnerable. That's
really, cool,
really
yeah.
interesting stuff. So you don't have to do what I say.
No, that's the plan.
But here's the deal. I want you to tell us, so you're fully in now, yes?
Yeah, yeah,
okay.
I think as of this week.
Okay, so people, if you want to find Jamie Kilstein, can they find you even though you went off of social media?
Okay, so here's the deal. So I went off social media.
Okay.
I realized like a lot of, when like comedians didn't like me, I did these like big block things on Twitter. Like I downloaded yeah, these yeah. block apps. So yeah. now all these people who like want to follow me again right. can't because they've been Oy prematurely fe. Blocked.
Right.
So I will eventually go back to Twitter.
Okay.
So you can start following me there. So my numbers go up and I have confidence.
There you go.
So that's at Jamie Kilstein. My Facebook's still up. What I did do, however, was I went on jamiekilstein.com. I just started a brand new mailing list. I literally just want to start from scratch. I'm going to be starting a podcast again. I'm going to start doing shows again. I'm going to do an Edinburgh Fringe run. And then I have some like recent stuff up there. So, yeah, that's what I would do. I would go to jamiekilstein.com.
That's
on,
good.
Get on that mailing list.
Yes, Jamie, I think this is good. I love this reaction you had to the show the other night. Because
oh,
it's
thank
again,
you.
It's when I hear people in these workshops and seminars going, it's all my boss's fault or it's all this guy's fault or my coworkers cock block me and
yeah.
you know, I have a lot of stress with my job. I have to work 18 hours a day. You know what? You don't.
Yeah, you know what's interesting is I feel like in a weird way, Republicans have stay with
Oy
me.
Vey.
Republicans, stay with me, everybody.
Tell me now, TED no, Talk. Let's leave on TED Talk.
They've hijacked this sort of personal. I would like almost get in trouble, like in my old progressive circles, talking about like personal responsibility and like, you know, because again, like these like rich Republicans have hijacked like pulling yourself up by your bootstraps and talk like that, where liberals have almost gone the opposite way.
Well, here's
where
the thing. I'm cutting you off and I'll tell you why. Because I don't know nothing about politics and that's why I'm a happier person. But also what I want to say is, who cares about them?
Yeah.
Guess what?
No, I know.
No, want to know why I'm really interrupting. I'm joking around, of course. Don't have circles.
Yes.
Stop with the circles.
Yes, yes,
no one
yes,
needs
yes.
a circle.
No.
Guess what you need? This person, one person here, one good friends
totally.
With a big heart. You don't need comics to help you. You don't need these liberals. Give us a fuck for them.
Totally.
You are self-sufficient enough on your own. And I'm not talking about just you, but everyone has inside them what it takes to really be their best self. And that sounds so fucking gay, but I don't care. I'm fucking gay. Okay, I'm coming out of the closet. I'm gay.
It's a big show. It's a big show.
Yeah, no. But seriously, I think are going to do fine if you just stick with you, knowing you know what you know.
Yeah.
All right?
All right.
Follow this fucker.
Yay.
Jamie Kilsey, and he really is funny now that I hear him talk real. If I'd have heard him years ago, I would have said, this fucking guy's crazy.
Yeah, I don't watch the news anymore either. It's the best.
Good.
When people were like, did you hear what Trump did? I was
no.
like, not in my world.
Nope.
He didn't do it. It doesn't exist.
All I cared about was who's grabbing a cunt or a pussy. That's all I care about. Jamie, honestly, thank you for coming.
Oh, I love you so
I'm
much.
So glad we reconnected.
This is
it
great.
Was so nice for you to reach out to me, and I'm so happy that you and I know each other. You got what it takes. In my heart, I know you're going to be a happy guy.
Thank you.
Yay. We will be right back. Now, speaking of guys who are good guys, but listen, Mike, lean into the mic for a second. Yeah. Guys who we know have stayed to look in the fair. At the state fair, eating all the caramel corn.
and the chili.
It's a chili cook-off. Chili. Hashtag fart. We're going to be calling Frank DeCaro, my opening act.
I'm guessing 212.3.
We do a weekly weigh-in with Frank, and we are going to see if he's back to being a fat fuck or he has towed the line. We'll be back. Get Stuffed with Lisa Lampanelli.
Get Stuffed with Lisa Lampanelli. We'll be right back.
Hey, everybody, Lisa Lampanelli here. And as you can see from all my beautiful pictures, no one likes changing their hair color more than I do. But I know finding the right hair color is definitely a challenge. Hair salons are freaking expensive. They take so much time. It's surrounded by people who, God forbid, don't even know my name. Wait, that's all about me. But needless to say, hair salons are expensive, time consuming, and drugstore box dyes, you never know what you're going to get. So eSalon is your answer. eSalon offers professional grade, completely personalized hair color created just for you. And it's delivered right to your door. It couldn't be easier. No sitting around a salon. No killing time reading magazines from 1972. You don't have to pay the prices you used to pay at these places. You can get hair color delivered right to your door. With eSalon, it's simple. You fill out a hair questionnaire online, upload your photo, and your personal colorist formulates your individually blended color from over 15,000 pigments. This way, you have that salon-quality personal touch right at your fingertips. Your unique eSalon color then gets shipped quickly and delivered to your door with your name on the bottle and instructions on how to get your hair exactly the way you want it. There's no guesswork. If you have questions, the hair color experts at eSalon are just a call or an email away. Honestly, it just couldn't be any easier. Also, if you want a little something different the next month like I do, just ask. Like a colorist in a real salon, eSalon keeps your color history and uses that information for future color orders. This is your color created just for you. Don't be like the rest of them. Get something that's just as individual as you are. eSalon understands you want it and you want it done right. Plus, your color won't ever fade because they've got your back and they'll cover your grays for you. Do it now, people. 100% satisfaction guarantee. If you're not totally happy with your color, eSalon will give you either a free reformulation or a refund. No risk, people. Go to eSalon right now. In fact, visit eSalon.com/getstuffed right now. New customers will get 50% off their first order. Are you kidding me? That's only $10 for your own personalized hair color. Try getting that in a salon. Get 50% off your first box at eSalon.com/getstuffed. That's eSalon.com/getstuffed. Go get it!
Get Stuffed with Lisa Lampanelli. Welcome back.
Hey, everybody. It's Get Stuffed with Lisa Lampanelli, and we are back for possibly my least favorite segment of every show because I get sadder and sadder that our friend Frank DeCaro gets beaten up by Mike Morse, and I will not allow it today unless it's really funny, and then it has to happen. So here we are, a weekly weigh-in with Frank DeCaro.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the red corner, standing at 5 foot, who cares, weighing God knows how much, it's the weigh-in with Frank DeCaro.
It doesn't seem so painful when Mike does it, though. I don't know why. I kind of like it almost.
So you,
when he beats me up.
So you kind of like a little cornhole when he sticks the tip in, so to speak?
Yeah, it's like one, like up to the first knuckle. You know, it's just not the wrist, just the knuckle.
Right.
You know,
okay.
I was going to say just a little, and it doesn't feel so bad. But you know, who doesn't stay in an abusive relationship? You know,
you do a little too long at the fair. Now, Frank, let's just get this over with, because I am not going to prolong this weight conversation long today, because I feel like I am preaching to the choir. You know what you need to do to lose weight. You know what you need to do to stay there. And you're doing it admirably because you haven't had a loss in how long, Mike? 17 weeks. And we've only been doing the podcast four. So, Frank, your weight last week was what, Mike?
211.2.
All right, Frank, don't lie to me. What were you on the New Jersey scale today?
The New Jersey scale, God bless it, is analog, but it was in between 211 and 212, so it's pretty much the same. I don't have a point for you because it's analog.
All right, so 212.
And I didn't lean on the
So basically 212, 214?
No, it really was between 211 and 212, so it was good.
Okay, Mike has written Mike's written you down.
I put down 217. Put 217 down.
Yeah.
But it was between 211 and 212.
Okay, so basically, let's say this. You're maintaining. You haven't gone past 212. Now, by analog, do you mean it's a scale that actually has like a little arm that goes?
It means I can't play my CDs on it. No, it doesn't. It spins. It's the old kind where you stand on it and it spins. But I didn't lean on the towel rack or the hamper.
Why didn't you just go to one of those highway those weigh stations where the trucks go?
Because then I would have had to put clothes on. But, you know, I didn't want to go through. No, and I have to tell you, I want you to picture this.
Oh,
okay.
No.
Uh-oh. I am a 211 point whatever man in a red union suit with a flap in the back. I look like a giant cinnamon red hot.
Are you telling me that's what you look like right now?
Yeah, I'm sitting here in a red union suit with the flap.
I'm going to throw up.
No, it's good. Please, my husband's chasing me around the house. It's fun. Please, I'm never, you know, you show a man a back flap and they go crazy.
Listen, let me tell you something about your husband. Never let it be said that your husband Jim has good taste. That's all I'm saying.
He dresses nice, though.
He sure does.
Some of his taste is terrific. But, yeah, no, so I am. I'm dressed. I look like a giant cinnamon red hot and just as delicious.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Even Mike would want me right now. He'd see that one button on the back flap and his teeth go crazy.
I'm really scared of this whole conversation. Now, listen, Frank, I'm not going to belabor this weight thing because I think you have more insight than anyone will ever know on our topic today, which is, quote, should I stay or should I go? Talking about leaving or staying in a odd / toxic / crap work environment. Now, Frank,
Oy vey.
Without, because I've banned you from crapping on former employers because I don't agree with that. I think that's a way of moving on is where you take the emotion out of it and just tell the truth about it. What do you think you have learned from staying too long in an environment that was not serving you?
The thing I've learned now is that you have to remind yourself, if something is not working, and you really look at it and say, did I give the old college try? And then say, are they really appreciating what I'm doing, and am I enjoying myself? You know, if you ask those questions, you have to believe in yourself enough to say, you know what, something else will come along and I can walk away from this. And I've never been good at walking away from something, even if it was making me really unhappy. I've never been good at that.
Like a taco stand?
I've sort of engineered where someone will break up with me if it was a relationship. You know, I've sort of misbehaved enough that they're like, I got to get out of here. But I've never said, you know what, this isn't working for me, and I got to go.
And
that's bad.
Frank, it is bad. Yes, and you know what's even worse? Mike Moore said a disparaging comment, and you were smart enough not even to acknowledge it, because that's a trick you need to use in a toxic work environment such as this podcast.
I didn't even hear it. That's which I'm getting better at.
Exactly. Yeah, you need to sometimes, and you know what's funny? You need to sometimes do ignore that. You need to sometimes, when it's minor like that, let it go. Like a lot of people, they stay in a job, but then they have to complain about every little thing, and it's really not that bad. Your pussy isn't getting groped. You're getting your promotions. You're not having somebody whip out their cock and masturbate in front of you, even though they have 3 series on TV. So just if someone occasionally says something funny about you, like Mike just said, which I will repeat, you said you find it hard to walk away from things. And Mike said,
like a taco stand.
Well, then that's something you just ignore and say, let it go, like in Frozen, because the rest of the environment is good enough, right?
It's true. But this is the way I feel. If Mike were to masturbate in front of me, I would say, well, he's mean, but at least he masturbates in front of me.
Okay,
you know, see, that would be a nice thing. If that's, and it's not because it's Mike. Sorry, Mike. It's not just because it's you. It's kind of because any fella who would say, would you mind? I'd be like, if you don't get it on me, I'm fine with it. I'll watch. Sure. What the hell?
Oh, as if the option of getting it on you ever turned you off.
Well, it depends on what I'm wearing. If it was velvet, it's a problem. If it's a T-shirt, maybe we could negotiate. Yeah. But no, I don't. I don't really. I would like to watch almost everyone do that. I'm the person who's fascinated by watching people.
Okay, let's back it up. I only said that in order to lead into Mike's insult about you. But what I'm trying to say is, sometimes if you have to put up with a little crap, it's okay if the bigger environment is great. Like, you love working for me. Go ahead, go with that. I do.
It's tough love, but I do love it because Lisa is encouraging, but she'll also tell you, you know what would work better. You know, she'll give you constructive criticism. Yeah, you really, I hate to be nice, but yes, you really are. She gives you constructive criticism and praise. And one weekend with Lisa will give you more constructive criticism and more praise than I got in 12 years at my former employer.
Now, your former employer, I blame you, basically, for staying too long. That's why I'm a tough love person. I always go,
oh, it's true.
Hey, if you didn't have a good time and you saw your weight was skyrocketing and you saw that you were putting more time in at a thankless job than into your relationship or et cetera, then you need to go. What was it to you? What was the progression? Did you have low self-esteem when you took the job, or did your self-esteem plummet the more you put up with a job that didn't seem to appreciate you?
I think I started at a very vulnerable point of no one's ever going to hire me feeling, which really wasn't true, but that's the way I felt.
Mm-hmm.
And then it got worse. It got better for a moment because, oh, new job, yay. And then it got worse. And then it just kept getting worse. And I kept putting on a brave face because that's what some people do. Maybe that's the female side of me, because I think women do that more.
Right.
You know, they
right.
put on the brave face and say, it'll work out. It'll be, you know, and I put on the brave face and acted all cheerful. And inside, I was dying a little bit all the time. And there were moments that I loved it, but I never felt appreciated. And I'm terrible in that I really need to feel appreciated. And I also need to know that the person, which is why we work out so nicely, knows more than I do in many, many, many situations. So I can learn things. When I know I can really learn something, I'm a good student. So I'm happy to be there. I'm happy to put in extra time. I'm happy to give it all of my energy. If I feel like, oh, God, I'm the cutest one in the, you know, if I can do the Nicki Minaj line where, you know, mirror, mirror, who's the fairest bitch in all the land? And I look around and go, oh, Jesus, it's me. That makes me feel terrible. It's
right.
Like,
you need to learn
that way.
Well, we were talking before about one of the a good work environment does involve like learning more and getting more responsibility and stuff. So, I mean, when I start you out at a 5-minute set and now you're up to 25, it's like, oh, more and more responsibly. Quite frankly, Frank, do you think I need an opening act? Absolutely not.
It could be, ladies and gentlemen, Lisa Lampanelli.
Right.
And that would be fine.
But
yes.
I'm not doing it out of the goodness of my heart. Believe me, I'm doing it because it's fun. It's good to have camaraderie. When will you know, how will you know, not with comedy, but how will you know if you've stayed too long at the fair? So that, or how can you prevent that feeling from overcoming you where you're like, wow, this is getting more toxic, whether it's a relationship, whether it's a job, it's career, etc. How do you sort of, what warning signs will you see?
I think the thing that I'm learning how to do is that instead of complaining behind anyone's back or, you know, or bitching and moaning at home, if something's not making you happy, you have to kind of address it and say, you know, I'm not enjoying this as much as I once did. And either how do we make it better or maybe we should, you know, part ways. But that's a tough lesson to learn. But I think we're all kind of working toward it. That's what I vowed when my last, before you and I started working together, when that employee ended, it was just they're either going to have to be really nice to me or pay an awful lot of money, but it can't be, you're not nice to me and you don't pay me a lot of money. You know, so it can't be, I'm poor and you're mean. That's not good.
Frank, you do have incredibly high standards because poor and mean too is not a good goal. I think you're doing great. I've seen a lot of growth. My only...
Yeah, up to 212.
Well, you shut... Hey, Mike!
he set me up. I didn't mean to do that. I'm very nice. Yo, Mike, you know, really funny fight I had with Frank once because he said how he just now said if he's complaining at home, it's not a good thing. Mm-hmm. So he would tell me sometimes... Like Frank would go, you know, well, Jim says this or Jim said that. And I go, stop talking to your fucking husband about things that are between me and you. And Frank goes, yeah, but it's like you can't get between me and a husband. I'm like, oh, yes, I fucking can. I pay you. Does he pay you? So it's like the craziest fight. But it is, you're right. It's good to address it off the bat with the person. Yeah, you'll talk and discuss it with your mate or whatever. But Jesus Christ, just to nip it in the bud and then have me kind of be able to come to some kind of compromise is an awfully good thing. Sometimes these bosses do need a chance to make things right.
Well, I've had a bad history with that because when I was in my 20s and I quit my first job because I had that frustrated feeling of you're not appreciating what I'm doing. And someone finally, I snapped.
Yeah.
And I quit and in those days it was more of a different time where people, you had that phone number where you could make one call and have a new job the next day. At least that was me in my 20s.
Right.
And so I used that, and then I walked in and quit my first big job. And they looked at me like, you're kidding. You never complained to us once. And I was like, I've been really bad about this throughout my career. And my first job, when I quit, they were blindsided. They had no idea I was unhappy. And it was back in the day when you had a phone number that basically, if you ever want to leave this job, we're ready for you. And I was in a very lucky position. But when I quit that first job, they looked at me like, wait a minute, you never once said you were unhappy. And I was like, I've been unhappy for more than a year. And they were shocked. And that's a bad pattern. And I've not grown as much from that in 30 years as I wish I had.
Right.
Because you really do need to say, this is not making me happy. And I think a lot of that comes from not feeling entitled to say, I'm unhappy and right. I'm putting in a lot of effort. And I think you're not being a dick by saying, I need more than this. But you're allowed to ask for that. And I'm finally, after all these years, learning that you can say, this is not making me happy. And as you and I, with that argument you talked about before where we came to blows, as they, no, that sounds dirty. when basically the idea of you go right to the person you're having issue with, rather than talking behind their back or going over their head, if there's no one over your head. But, you know, if there's someone that's making you unhappy, you have to say, this is not working for me. What can we do to make it better? And that's only being fair to them.
Right.
And to yourself, too, really. You're finally saying, I'm worth something. And if I'm going to keep working as hard as I am, I need at least this, and this. And
right.
For me, it's always, I have to respect the person I'm answering to. And if I do, no one's a better student than I am. If I know I can learn something, my tongue is wag. I'm like, oh boy, I can learn things. I can learn things.
Who's a good boy? Who's a good boy?
Who's a good boy?
Who's a good faggot?
Thank you.
Who's a good little faggot? Frank,
you've made
several good points today. And I have to say,
stop it.
No, you have. I feel like you and I have hit a nice stride. So then when I finally do retire from comedy, if I should do that, and I give you your 6 months notice, because I don't give 2 weeks, I give 6 months notice, that you will say, wow, now I know what a good benevolent boss is, and now I will demand the same from my next one. Isn't that true? Have you not learned this from me?
I have learned, yes, I've learned a lot about what a good boss is. I've learned, because you ask a lot, and you give even more, and that is the way everyone should be. If you ask a lot, you give a lot.
Don't expect everyone to be like me, because I'm terrific, but at least know that you cannot stay someplace that chips away at your self-worth, because Frank, as you know, you're worth very little, and why should you compromise even that?
Exactly.
Tuppence.
Why get rid of what little there is?
There you go.
Three crumbs, why give away two?
Now, right? Frank,
you... And also I learned more bosses are like Mike than you.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's true.
Dig and dig and dig and give me nothing.
All right, Frank, we have to go, because guess why? Because I'm a good boss and I don't want to have to pay you overtime. So
I'm gonna go run around the neighborhood dressed as a giant cinnamon red hot, and it'll be beautiful.
We're going to see you next week. We're going to talk about something else near and dear to your heart, which I shan't expose right now. However, where can the people find you on social media?
I'm at frankdecaro.com and on social media at Frank DeCaro Show. And it's DeCaro. And I love Lisa Lampanelli.
I love you too, Frank. And congratulations on not gaining weight and on having shut the fuck up, Mike. See how nice I am. I love you, Frank. I'll talk to you next week.
Love you, guys.
Love you.
Not her, not him. Just you, Lisa. All right.
All right, Mike, that was good. That was good.
I love you too, Frank.
It all worked out.
It did all work out.
Thank you.
It was a good show.
Yeah. What did we learn? We have learned.
We've learned sometimes you got to move on.
Sometimes you got to move on.
Right.
Finish it in the way it started. You started with a good open heart, end with a good open heart towards a new experience. And also, don't judge people like me who are giving you advice by saying, oh, she has money, she has a retirement plan. Listen, sometimes it's worth taking a step down in career or in job title or in just money to preserve your sanity and your health, because you will get sick and die. And then where are you? In a coffin with Frank DeCaro, who's going to gain all his weight back.
But slowly.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Point two at a time.
Point two at a time. It's always, well, just point two.
Listen, folks, we'll be back next week. Mike, first I want to ask you.
Okay.
No advice, because you have nothing to give. Where can people find you on social media, my friend?
Well, let me tell you, I am on Mike Morse Says, MikeMorseSays, Says on Twitter, and also on Facebook as well. You can find me there. This is a long plug. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
And on the intranet, if you want to see my website, it's Write Funny, WRITE, writefunny.net.
Yes, and to find me, you know what? You don't even have to find me, because I'm that fucking cool and that famous. Lisa Lampanelli everywhere. What the hell, people? Come on, get with the program.
Lest we forget, let's thank Lauren and Ken from Puffin'
Dough. I love them.
Yes, the tunes you hear are from them. And let's not, well, we could forget Anthony.
I always forget Anthony until he sends me an email every week to annoy me. Oh, could you listen to the podcast to make sure it's right? How about you listen first, dummy? Cut out all the dead air so I don't have to freaking send you notes. How's that sound, pal?
That was his
Sorry.
Plug.
Sorry, see how he's becoming toxic?
Yeah.
And I have to leave this environment soon.
But if you want to hear more of this fun stuff and other fun stuff, check out more shows by Feral Audio by going to feralaudio.com.
Yes. And Anthony, you know I'm kidding. Don't put in a fucking complaint. And you know, if you don't know I'm a comic, you can go fuck yourself too, Anthony. So you know what? I take back my apology. Anyway.
Yes.
This has been terrific. Mike, I love you. I hope you don't quit yet until I retire from comedy, if that ever is. Jim, nothing can be said about you except goodness. How about that?
Of course, yes.
How about that? A pro.
He's taking care of any problems we've had.
He's never the one who I have to cut out the dead air for.
No.
He's the one who does the edits, and that dope Anthony gets a hold of it, and all of a sudden I'm sucking a cock on a Wednesday. What? Sorry, folks. That's for next week.
It took a left turn.
It certainly did. One that we'll never come back from. Seriously, people, thank you so much for tuning in. We'll see you next time on Get Stuffed with Lisa Lamalala.
Did you get stuffed? Did you get stuffed? She's the queen of mean. She can't be tamed.
larger than life with a tiny frame. She's raw as hell. She's hot. She's rough. She's Lisa Lampanelli, and you just got stuffed.